from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Sprinkle Sparkle contains adult themes and may not be suitable for all ages.
Access to pleasure and indulgence is our right, and we're entitled to it. It's not a favor that somebody's granting us. It's not a reward. It's just like why we're here. My hope is that people will listen to this and relate, even in the ugly parts, because there's something sparkling about that too. Welcome to Sprinkle Sparkle. I'm Nubia Bennett. Today, we're talking to Ariel Clark.
My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am now a 30-year-old Louisville, Kentucky native. Born here, raised here, not leaving for a while. I am queer. I also am the owner and founder of Siscot Tea, Louisville, Kentucky's Black-owned, queer-owned, LGBTQ-owned, woman-owned tea business.
It's a Black-owned, completely Black-owned, completely queer-owned, and totally local. She makes all the tea. She has the tea.
And a published author.
A little bit of everything. Jill of all trades, as usual.
And just kind of vibing and going through life and trying to get through the pandemic. So
to know Ariel is to love Ariel, first of all. She is an openly queer woman who is very expressive on social media. We met through social media and through some friends. And she does, you know, she openly talks about her journey with pain, long-term pain, and because she does have health issues, she's very open about that as well. And she's open about her business, her businesses that she has, and just really navigating the world in this world, this city, this community, this business community as a queer person, as a queer Black body. She offers really great insight about what it looks like when, you know, because you see a business owner who is successful, right, by all measures, and, you know, and well-known even, right? Because you say, Sis Got Tea. Oh, yeah, because you can find her stuff at Rainbow Blossom. You can find her stuff online, all over social media. Like, people know who she is, and they've taken her class if you go to U of L, you know. So she's really well-known, so it's easy to look at people like that and just assume everything is great. So I really appreciate her openness about her struggles with lots of things. And it's, if you listen to this episode, that she's very open about those things. And the idea of thinking about what pleasure means within the scope of dealing with long-term pain, I thought that it was very insightful and very vulnerable. I mean, I knew it was going to be a good conversation beforehand because I do my research, but and also I could just talk to her all day anyway. So
I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, I've been looking forward to talking to you like all week. I went down my list of folks. So I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. What I want to do first is really like level set and be like, make sure that we're using the same words that mean the same thing to everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're going to let you define what that means, because I mean, I can have my own definitions of what pleasure means. When I say that word, what does that mean to you?
Pleasure. Pleasure means safety, contentment, comfort, space to heal your trauma, space away from trauma. That's a really good question. I've never thought about what my personal definition of pleasure is. For me, it's difficult to describe pleasure in words. For me, pleasure is more of a sensation. Like when I think of the word pleasure, I think of warmth in my chest. I think of comfort. I think of safety. I think of low energy things, things that don't take away my energy. I am a person with chronic pain, and I'm also neurodivergent, which means I have mental illnesses. I hate the word illnesses, but I do have mental illnesses. I have PTSD, generalized anxiety disorder, and major depressive disorder. And along with that, I have chronic pain from a car wreck I was in March 2019. Mm-hmm. So I have chronic hip pain, chronic back pain, and neck pain. And then I also have migraines and GI problems and things like that. And so because of that, a lot of things that folks who do not have chronic pain or folks who are neurotypical, things that people do from day to day take a lot more energy for me than they do for other people. And so for me, pleasure is something that doesn't take away too much of my own energy. And so things that may not necessarily give me more energy, but things that either very slowly replenish my energy or things that are energy neutral, meaning that they don't take away, but they don't add either. And so for me, because of my background with like trauma from all different types of scenarios and environments, so trauma from all different areas of life, pleasure for me means safety, comfort, awareness, space away from that trauma, and also space to heal trauma. So
what has been historically your relationship to pleasure?
So I started thinking about the history of pleasure as you were talking, and it made me realize that I come from a very traumatic background and a traumatic upbringing and things like that. I'm not going to go into detail about that, mm-hmm. but I'm starting to realize that when I was younger, for me, like when I was young, like a child, like pleasure to me meant, you know, the simple things like playing with a toy or going outside and things like that. But as I got older and started going through puberty and things, I lost my own definition of pleasure and started to have my pleasure defined by what society and what abusers were telling me. And so for me, pleasure came from sex. Pleasure came from other people's pleasure that may have been coming from an abusive background, which means that, you know, pleasure came from sex, but I may not necessarily have wanted to have sex, but that person told me that pleasure comes from sex, and so I'm going to do that. Pleasure came from folks complimenting me, but those compliments may have been underhanded or motivated by something not so healthy. So folks who feed you compliments to get something out of you and aren't necessarily genuine. It took until I started doing intense healing processes in therapy that my definition of pleasure now, like going through the healing process and looking back on all those traumatic events, my definition of pleasure now is safety and being in control of my own environment and being able to finally tell people no, and this is what I want, and putting myself first, because I grew up in a very put yourself last environment, which I've gone into, not to go off the rails a little bit, but I've gone into some very deep conversations about, is that just trauma or is that generational oppression for Black families to teach their children to put themselves last? Like, is there hierarchy because of generational oppression? Because, you know, enslaved people weren't able to be like, well, I don't feel comfortable working out in the fields today. Like, you did it, you shut up, and that was it. But anyway, that's an episode for another day. But now my pleasure is informed by what I feel inside and by what I need to prosper and to be healthy. And so for me, pleasure is safety. Pleasure is a quiet home. Pleasure is being around friends, but not overextending myself in those friendships. Like, if I invite you over and we're having an event from 5 to 7, 7:01, you got to go. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, I'm not going to kick these people out. They're having a real good time, and you're here till 11 o'clock. It's from 5 to 7. And I'm going to hang up that little sign that says you ain't got to go home, but you cannot stay here. 7:01, you got to leave. The bonnet is on, the bra is off. I'm done. So pleasure is putting in those boundaries so that I remain healthy. Pleasure is healing. Pleasure is going to therapy once a week. I will say that the pleasure stops when I have to pay the copay, but yeah, the therapy session itself, great. Pleasure is doing the things that I enjoy with no restrictions on someone telling me what to do or telling me that I'm a burden or that I'm in the way. So yeah, that's it. And then of course there are like more solid things, like pleasure is like hot baths and naps and things like that. But for me, pleasure is safety. Pleasure is sustaining my boundaries and putting myself first, and pleasure is healing. So
listening to your story, my next question then is, who in your life either taught you to feel good or taught you what not to do so that you could embody this? But who embodied that practice of pleasure, or who didn't so much that you were like, this is how I'm embodying it? Does that make sense?
Yeah. The first thought that comes to my mind is my therapist, because I grew up in traumatic environments. And when you're a child, like, you don't know anything outside of that. You know right. what I mean? Like, you think that everybody's home life is the same as yours. Mm-hmm. And the running joke that I see on like Facebook is like a meme all the time is like, when people have trauma, they go, y'all ever tell a story from your childhood and you think it's funny, but then your friends don't laugh and look at you horrified, and then you realize that actually that's abuse or trauma. Yeah. Like, those are the situations that happened. And I didn't know anything different from that until I got outside perspective. And the outside perspective that sticks out the most is my therapist. Mm-hmm. And the therapist that I have now, because I've been through many, many therapists in my life. So I've been seeing this therapist for 3 years, 4 years, somewhere in there. I don't remember. It's all a blur. Did you know that PTSD and depression and anxiety can affect your memory? Anyway, a whole different story for another day. Yeah. So I've been seeing her for about 3 or 4 years, and I came to her, because I was in a super abusive relationship, and I was like, I need therapy or something. Cause I went to the employee assistance program. And I was like, I don't feel motivated to do anything. I feel trapped in my relationship. And they're like, have you thought about doing, there's a certain type of therapy called EMDR. And I think it stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing, or reprogramming, one of those. Mm-hmm. So basically it's like facing your trauma using like eye movement, similar to REM sleep and stuff like that. And so they suggested that. I found a therapist here in the city that does it. We have a really great relationship. She's super cool. She's super chill. I absolutely adore her. But it took someone telling me things that, like, hey, that's not healthy, or hey, and then reading up even through like social media and things like that, that certain things aren't healthy. Like, for example, one of the things I keep seeing, particularly in Black families, is, you know, when your parent comes to you and says, you should be thankful, I give you a roof over your head, I feed you, I pay the bills. It's like, that's abuse and manipulation, because you're supposed to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you had a child, this is your responsibility. You know what I mean? That's like if I were in a relationship and I turned to my partner and I said, you know, you're lucky that I love you, or you're very fortunate, you shouldn't complain, I don't hit you. And it's like, you're supposed to do that? Like, that's
right.
That's supposed to be the standard, you know what I mean?
Right.
It reminds me of conversations I've had with my friend about dating men and like how low our bars are because of patriarchy. Another day. So it took getting that outside perspective, an outside healthy perspective, and walking through those scenarios and things like that to really set the course for what pleasure is defined, for what I define as pleasure now, because the pleasure from the past was coming from abuse, because that's all the knowledge that I had. And all of that knowledge comes from childhood. And so I went into relationships where I thought like, oh, this is normal, this is supposed to happen, but it turns out it was abuse. Mm-hmm. And I carried that into my work relationships. Like, oh, I'm supposed to be overworked and overstressed and afraid of my boss. Like, and it all came from trauma. And then eventually I got a therapist and she was like, you know, that's not good, right? And I was like, what do you mean? Oh, and then, you know, 4 years later, I'm still unpacking stuff. I'm going to be unpacking things for the rest of my life. But it took an outside perspective and professional mental health, which fortunately I have the privilege of having access to it, to really put me on the path of healthy pleasure. And then also recognizing that it's not my boundaries, it's their boundaries that are unhealthy. Like, for instance, you know, I was in a few environments where, you know, I would talk about, I went through stages of queerness. Like, I thought I was gay, and then I thought I was bisexual, and then I thought I was gay again. And then I was like, I don't know. And then I'm queer now, just not straight.
Yeah.
And so I would talk about like my queerness or my blackness. People were like, I don't want to hear about all that. And it's like, oh, my bad. You know, oh, this is normal to kind of like hide your identities and kind of keep them down. No, it's because they're so uncomfortable with it that they don't want to hear about it. And it reminds me of, I cannot remember where I read it, but I ended up having a conversation with a friend who is also Black and queer. And we talked about how queerness isn't really talked about in Black households. And the classic example is like, you've got that one auntie that always brings her friend over, and your auntie is femme, but for some reason her friend looks really butch and they're always together.
Yeah.
And it's never, this is my partner, this is my girlfriend. It's always like, oh, that's auntie's roommate. Oh, that's auntie's friend. Yeah. Oh, that's auntie so-and-so. Oh, that's just cousin, blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's your other auntie, you know? And it's not talked about in communities like that. And so I also had to realize that I'm going to make other people uncomfortable, and we need to question why they're uncomfortable when talking about identities and things like that. And honestly, a lot of my pleasure comes from being out and proud about my identities and having transparent conversations and things like that, especially with mental health. So.
So has the pandemic, cause we talked a little bit about the pandemic at the, you know, at the beginning, has that changed at all in your relationship to pleasure and in how you say yes and no and all of that?
My gut tells me yes, because during the pandemic, one, I couldn't go out in person, but sobriety is really in my head right now because I just announced that I'm going to be a speaker at a virtual sobriety conference that's happening at the end of September. It's going to be super exciting. But, you know, one of the things that really came up when the pandemic started was like sobriety and addiction and things like that, because a lot of folks who are forced to stay at home or not interact with people socially, like a lot of folks depend on that social interaction to stay sober. And so what else is there to do but sit around the house and drink, you know what I mean? And I started really meeting people and talking to people who are sober, who are in recovery, or who are sober curious. And, you know, the minute that the world opened back up, it was like, I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to go to these events that have alcohol. I'm going to do all these things. And I choose to be sober because alcohol doesn't taste good. Alcohol's expensive. I don't like the way alcohol makes me feel, because I don't feel in control of my body. And I feel like my boundaries are violated more easily because people like to take advantage of vulnerable people. I also choose not to drink because it just doesn't appeal to me. I did not grow up in a home with alcohol. So my first experience with alcohol was peer pressure. And I recently found out that one of the medications that I'm on for my depression and anxiety can actually cause liver damage over time, and alcohol makes it worse. And so now I have a medical reason to be sober. And so I did drink before the pandemic, not regularly, maybe like once every couple months or so. But now with the pandemic, like I just kind of sat in myself and I was like, why do I drink? You know what I mean? And I was like, I don't really like the taste of it. It doesn't make me feel good. And I get migraines really easily. So I can't have like red wine and stuff like that because of the tannins in it can give you headaches. And I was like, it's expensive. And yeah, no, I'm just not gonna drink anymore. And so I shifted my pleasure from drinking to maintaining sobriety and kind of sitting with my thoughts. And sometimes I used to drink to just kind of forget about trauma, and then I had to go and face it. So the pandemic has changed what pleasure looks like to me. Also in terms of sitting in the quiet, because I used to keep myself busy a lot so I wouldn't have to face that trauma and sit alone with my thoughts. But now that I don't have a choice but to do that, it's been very eye-opening and has really helped in my healing with therapy. Like I'll sit and I'll just have a random thought about like my past or make a connection. I make a bullet point in my phone. And then every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, I'm like, hey girl, this is what I wrote down this week. You know, like some people are like, I don't know, should I tell my therapist? I'd be like kicking down my therapist's door and like roller skating in backwards. Like, hey girl, it's been a hell of a week. What you been up to? How are the kids? So pleasure has changed a little bit during the pandemic, but not very much. But I will say that it has moved in a very positive direction.
That is lovely. Like, so, cause it's like, and I've actually heard this in some of my other conversations, cause I feel like that even even the conversation we're having right now has become my obsession in the last mm-hmm. year or so. Like, I've just been like, pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. And this is before I mm-hmm. even had the opportunity to have a podcast. So, mm-hmm. but in that conversation, especially since the pandemic started, I'm hearing like the centering of the things, even the things that aren't like feeling good in the sense of like, ooh, this bubble bath feels good in this moment. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure facing your trauma does not feel good in the moment.
It does not feel good in the moment, but afterwards you're like, I feel a little bit better.
Absolutely. But so like that act, the centering of that pleasure is like how you're guiding your life every day mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis. Because you're like, bullet point, Wednesday, I'm making up a day. Like Wednesday, right. Boom, these things we talk yep. about today. So then, okay, so if it is a daily practice, something that you're doing every single day, mm-hmm. Which is amazing, how do you navigate, because centering pleasure seems to be your anchor, how mm-hmm. do you use that anchor to navigate life's demands, right? Because we don't always have that choice. We don't always have access to, oh no, 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 mm-hmm. no, I'm doing this today. Sometimes you just have to. How do you navigate that? Mm-hmm. Especially when you don't have access to just completely, especially when the world opens back up.
Right.
Not supposed to, those kinds of things. How do you do that?
So using that anchor as a navigation point through different scenarios and situations, like, I look at all of these situations and all of these opportunities with new eyes now, because now I have these tools to recognize that this is going to be traumatic, like the situation is going to be traumatic, or it feeds into generational oppression, or am I going to get pleasure from it, or am I just doing it for somebody else so that they get pleasure out of it because that's how I was raised? Mm-hmm. Am I going back to traumatic behaviors? Am I going into a space that's not safe? And so I use that anchor as like a resource. It's like constantly looking over my shoulder and being like, okay, these are the tools I have. Let's not forget them, because it is very easy to fall back into trauma patterns. We learn behaviors that are defense mechanisms when we are in abusive situations, but we take those defense mechanisms and they turn into abusive actions for someone else. And so it's that cycle of abuse, right? Like, my mother hit me, and so I used to hit her back as a defense mechanism, but that's all I grew up with. So now I hit other people, and like, you know, those different types of things. It's also generational oppression, because we learned from our ancestors who learned how to cope with slavery and all this stuff, a topic for another day. But it's always keeping that book in your back pocket, because one of the things about healing from trauma is that it is uncomfortable, because you're going into new environments with new tools, and it can be very anxiety inducing, because unfortunately, one of the situations I was in has to do with domestic violence, and I am in a very healthy, loving relationship right now. And every once in a while, I'll be like, is he going to do violence against me? Mm-hmm. Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. And there are days when it's like really anxiety inducing, because we've been dating for about almost a year now, and he has never been violent towards me. And so the farther along it goes, the more anxiety inducing it can be, because I'm like, it's like waiting for a volcano to erupt. Like when the news comes on, they're like, we're way overdue for an eruption. And you're like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, like I'm nodding in my head, like you're watching me nod and hard. Right. Like, yes, yes, that's and the
it's,
part.
It's taking those tools, no matter how nerve wracking it can be, and using those tools in different situations. Like I've been invited to like panels and stuff. And I like to say that I'm a recovering Catholic, because I grew up in the Catholic Church. I turned away from the church because it was just an overall traumatic experience for me to like be in the church and things like that. Other people go a different direction, and that is absolutely amazing. But for me, I decided to walk away from that. And I've been invited on panels like, oh, can we talk about Christianity and Catholicism? And I've been like, no, thanks. You know, I could easily go into those and be like, oh, this is going to be great PR for Syscot T and blah, blah, blah. But am I doing it for Syscot T, or am I doing it because I feel pressured to say yes, because that's how I was raised, that I should always put other people's pleasure before me. And so I have to have those conversations with myself on a daily basis, because 98% of my behaviors used to be trauma informed, because literally that's all I knew. And so it's really difficult to kind of separate myself sometimes. Like right now, I'm sick. It's not COVID. Let me add that as a disclaimer. I possibly have a UTI. I don't know. I've never had one, but it feels like it. And so I'm sitting here like just resting the entire day. And then all of a sudden I'm like, the trauma of constantly being stressed out comes out. And so I'm like, I need to be stressed about something. I need to be busy with something. Mm-hmm. I need to be working through my sickness somehow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like a few hours ago, I posted like, I think I'm going to plan a huge flea market for late November, early December. And it's all LGBTQ owned businesses. And it's going to be enormous. And, you know, people are like, Ariel, if you don't go take a fucking nap. And I'm like,
I'm glad you have friends.
Right. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then like a week ago, I was like, I should make a new product line for Cisco Tea. I should do bath bombs, bath salts, and all these other things while I'm like laid up on the couch, sick. And I'm like, I should be doing something. And then my friend's like, if you don't take a fucking nap. And I'm like,
that's what you should be doing is a nap.
I have the space to take a nap, which means that I'm not working hard enough, right? Because we're like literally raised in those homes and we are surrounded by a very capitalist, like work until you're dead culture. And we have baby boomer parents that tell us like, you should be at the same company for the rest of your life. And then you die with your work boots on. All of that goes back to slavery.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more from Ariel Clark. Welcome back to Sprinkle Sparkle.
So I was thinking about because you are a business owner and like when I ask people, oh, do you know Ariel? At first some people are like, I don't know. And I'm like, she's got teeth. Yeah. I follow her on Instagram, right? So I'm thinking about, it makes me think of social media and
right.
It's a pleasure, especially as we think about how popular self-care, blah, 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 whatever buzzwords are.
Right.
How has optics, I think we've had these conversations offline a couple of different times, right? Mm-hmm. The role of optics on social media, like for you looking out into social media, but also for people looking in mm-hmm. at you, does that play a role on your relationship to pleasure?
Oh, it absolutely does. Like looking into social media, there's a lot of like crap that comes in via social media, a lot of like tragic news and things like that. Mm-hmm. But seeing other people's accomplishments, big or small, brings me pleasure. I will say that I've had to put up some boundaries with the optics in terms of Ciscot Tea mm-hmm. to make sure that my pleasure is sustained. And so I get pleasure from people recognizing me as Ciscot Tea, but only on a surface level. And mm-hmm. so when people are like, oh my God, you're Ciscot Tea. I want to be your best friend. I'm like, thank you for that. But this is more of a professional relationship. Mm-hmm, and if mm-hmm. my whole entire identity revolves around Ciscot Tea, then this isn't going to work out. You know what I mean? Because I am so much more than Ciscot Tea. There's a whole entire complicated ass being behind mm-hmm, Ciscot mm-hmm, Tea. Mm-hmm. A really good example is I'm on Tinder, non-monogamous, you know, and I'll match with people. And some people are like, are you the Ciscot Tea lady? And I'm like, this is automatically not going to work. Because like I'll talk to them on a surface level. Like I appreciate new friends. That is totally fine. But like, if you're like, oh, you're the Ciscot Tea lady and you're trying to like date me or something, I'm like, I'm much more than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
A really good example is I was in a casual encounter with somebody and every time we like had sex or we were holding hands in public, they'd be like, I'm in bed with Ciscot Tea, or I'm holding hands with Ciscot Tea. And I'm like, am I anything more to you than this figure in the community that owns a business? Like, I am so much more than that. Can we put that to the side? I don't want to think about Ciscot Tea all the time. Like sometimes Ciscot Tea doesn't bring me pleasure. I'd be looking at my big old to-do list for Ciscot Tea. And I'm like, this is just stressing me out. I'm gonna walk away for a little bit. Or I'm gonna take it one little bite at a time. Like, I had a meeting with my accountant on Friday and I have this whole big list of things to do. And I was like, I'm super stressed out. I'm not going to look at it right now. This is not bringing me pleasure. But today I was sitting on the couch and I was like, I'm super bored. I don't feel well. And if I'm sitting here bored, I'm just going to focus on how I don't feel good. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I have a little bit of energy. let me do something that makes me happy. And so I started working on Cisco T stuff on my computer. Like, I'm not going to do store orders today because I don't have the energy for that. But what brought me pleasure was like answering an email and building a link tree for Syscout T and like stuff like that. Yeah. And so having the optics of being, I keep being called a community leader, but I can't wrap my head around that. Like I'm over here just vibing. Like I have a business and I play with leaves all day. Like, I don't know how that makes me a community leader, which I'm still, that also is rooted in a lack of self-confidence and being told that I will always be last and that I'm a burden. But anyway, topic for another day. But having those optics brings me pleasure as well, because I like being known as Syscout T, but like I said, only on a certain level. And then with social media, being able to look in and see how Syscout T has affected people has been absolutely amazing. And also seeing my friends' like accomplishments, big or small, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like, I got into college or I did this. It can be like, I woke up today and I'm like, Go ahead
with your getting out of bed.
Right. You shook the crumbs out your bed sheets. Listen, that is difficult, because when you're depressed, you just be rolling around your own crumbs. Like, and if you had the energy today through all of your depression and all of that to get up and shake the crumbs out of your bed. You love yourself enough to shake the crumbs out of your bed. You know what I mean? And so social media has given me more pleasure, but I have to be really careful because of all the news and stuff like that. Reading about anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers really stresses me out. So, and my pleasure. And one of the bigger things is that a lot of my friends are healing from trauma, and seeing and watching them and experiencing them healing and being in better places than they were also brings me pleasure. But I also see a lot of like posts about like healing from trauma and really like motivational things about trauma. I even have an album in my phone about it. And so one of the most recent things I saved is I get really self-conscious about my health because I do have to cancel things and I'm not able to do the things I used to. And one of the ones I saved was, you're not unreliable, your health is. Shout out to all my chronically ill people who get shit for being late, for canceling because their health prevents them and feel like jerks because of it. It's not your fault. And I grew up really self-conscious about my Blackness growing up in white spaces and things like that. And this is from Gabriel Ramirez from Button Poetry. And it says, I am Black and full of stars. I am not the absence of light. I am who allows the light to exist.
Ooh. That's beautiful.
That's what I said. I was like, oh, okay. That's good. Oh, that is so good. And then there's another one that says, you've mastered survival mode. Now it's time to live.
I've seen that one. I've seen that one. And it says something about now it's time to thrive too, or flourish or any of those kind of things.
Right. That's beautiful. And let's see. There's a few other ones. Let's see. There's one that says, you only got one family. Yeah, you only got one appendix too, but when it fucks with your health, you cut that bitch out your life. I was like, oh! And then there's like short ones like, we repeat what we don't repair.
Yeah.
Like all of these motivational things I've gotten off of social media. Mm. And so that has been absolutely amazing to find, and it's been, there are so many that I have saved, and there's one that says, the next time you think of beautiful things, don't forget to remember yourself. And I'm like, and it says, so I read the book The Body Keeps the Score, and it talks about how trauma literally changes your brain, like changes the shape of your brain, neurological processes and all these things. And I sit and I'm like, I'm going to be this way forever. Like, I'm so terrified of being this way forever. And then I was scrolling on social media one day being sad about the fact that like my brain is literally different because of trauma. And I found this: when it feels disheartening to learn that trauma changes the brain, remember that healing changes the brain too. And I was filled with like so much pleasure and hope. And I was like, this is great. And then there's one that says, as you focus on clearing your generational trauma, do not forget to claim your generational strengths. Your ancestors gave you more than just wounds. And I'm like, oh, This is nice. So anyway, I find all these things through social media. So that's the point is I get a lot of pleasure from social media because there's a lot of like really good healing things on there. But you have to be careful because there's a lot of things on there that can set you back. So anyway.
Again, so it just goes back to what you like the theme of what you've been saying almost the entire time is about boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. So you're like, no, no, no to these things. And
right.
I know I get a lot of flack for no being one of my favorite words. Like people mm-hmm. ask me like, why do you say no so much? Because I'm trying right. to find my enthusiastic yes. So if I know mm-hmm. what I don't want, then I'm very clear about what I do. And right. so in that space you're creating for social media is you're mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm aware of how I am appearing to other people. I'm also mm-hmm. aware of my boundaries there. And then I'm aware of the boundaries of what I need on social mm-hmm. media because there is a lot of really great, beautiful things I can take
right.
and hold on to, but there's also a lot of ugliness in the world. And so it's, mm-hmm. it's like you impose the same boundaries you have in your day-to-day in-person life on social media.
Right.
What it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And one of the things I've been really struggling with during the pandemic is my body in general and how it's been changing. There's new aches and pains. Some old aches and pains have gone away, but it's like relearning your body all over again. Mm-hmm. Like some aches and pains are a lot less, so I can do these things. But when I do these things, it activates a new ache or pain. And then like my body has changed in terms of weight, which is internalized fat phobia mm-hmm. that I'm working through every single day. And somebody posted, your summer body is the one that quarantined to flatten the curve, the one that fed a community, the one on the front line, the one suddenly homeschooling, the one trying to make ends meet, the one that survived and is surviving COVID. Your current body is worthy of sunshine. Your body is good. And I was like, I needed that today. You know what I mean?
That's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Your summer body is the one you got in the summer.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, because of social media and because of just mass media in general, mm-hmm. you can talk. I mean, self-care is, of course, a big part of why we talk about pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. How do we take care of ourselves? But for me, it's an umbrella term as well. So I'm going to throw a couple of different terms at you. And, mm-hmm. and I'd like you to talk to me a little bit more about how you differentiate these things and if differentiating them even matters to you. Mm-hmm. So there's self-care, which you can take that word on, but also this idea of pleasure practices. Mm-hmm. What are pleasure practices to you? And are they the same or different as self-preservation tasks, mm-hmm. Or self-preservation in general and self-indulgent practices? Like, mm-hmm. are those things different to you? And if they are or not, does that even matter?
Mm-hmm. So let me say this as a former student affairs professional. Self-care is just a buzzword that a student affairs administrators put at the end of slideshows after they tell you how much you're going to be overworked.
True.
Don't forget self-care, but we're going to call you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anyway, I feel like self-care has become really empty because people are throwing it around so much, but not actively practicing it. Yeah. Not individuals in particular, but like companies and organizations who work their workers into the ground. And then they're like, we really value self-care. And it's like, do you, or are you just adding that word in so that you look good? Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on to the next topic. Pleasure practices. The first thing that comes to mind for pleasure practices for me is therapy. I practice receiving pleasure by going to therapy and learning about ways how I can receive pleasure or maintain my pleasure. Self-preservation for me is more like in the moment of like, I am surviving this trauma. How do I preserve myself through a traumatic event? And so for me, there's like current trauma that I'm facing because I'm still getting traumatized to this day. Self-preservation is like the trauma that's happening to me right now and how to survive through that. And then pleasure practice and self-indulgence is facing the trauma of the past so that I can be a better future person. And so for me, self-preservation is like, I'm out in the desert with no water. How am I going to live? And then, self-indulgence and pleasure practice is like, if I end up in that situation again, how can I be better, survive that better? And how do I make sure that I don't put people in the desert? You know what I mean? And not give them access to water. And so, I hope that makes sense. Self-care has become empty because of, companies and organizations trivializing it. Self-preservation is about living in the present moment. It's almost kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs almost. It's like preservation's at the bottom, practices in the middle, and then indulgence is at the top, right? But they're all extremely important. So the most important thing is preserving yourself. And then the next most important part is pleasure practice, like taking what you've learned and actively practicing it. And then self-indulgence is just a whole nother level. I hope that makes sense.
No, that definitely does. I love that differentiation.
Yeah.
That hierarchy of needs sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about that as we talk about what we have access to. We've talked about, because you are a Black woman, right? A queer Black woman. How has that impacted your access to pleasure, right? We talked about your history and then the people that have taught you to feel good. But how has just existing in this world as you are impacted your access and experience with pleasure?
As a Black person, I have generational trauma, and I was raised in an environment with a lot of generational trauma. And part of that generational trauma is always being forced to put myself last. And so my pleasure came from making sure I don't have any pleasure. You know what I mean? And so fighting that generational oppression and being a queer woman as well. The pleasure of being in a relationship or being sexual. I did not have a sexual encounter with my first Black person until the age of 25. I am 30. And so I thought that was pleasure in a lot of different areas, but unfortunately it wasn't, because it turned out I was just a fetish for a lot of those people, or it was very like, oh, I went to bed with a Black woman or blah, blah, whatever. Mm-hmm. I will say right now that my partner's white, he is absolutely super duper respectful, and I do not feel like a fetish. He has reinforced like verbally and physically that I am not, you know, that I am not a fetish. Anyway, topic for another day, but, you know, it's, I don't even know where to start on that story. So I will just say, yes, it has definitely affected what pleasure means to me and my journey to pleasure, because marginalized folks experience oppression every single second of every single day. And unfortunately that does inform what pleasure means to us. And at first, pleasure to me was like basic respect, like, oh, I didn't get called the N-word today. What a great day. But, you know, as things have gone on, it's like, that's not pleasure. That's just a fucking requirement. You know what I mean? But, you know, now pleasure is being out and loud and proud about my queerness and my Blackness, when in the past it wasn't, because I was consistently shamed for it. So shamed for it in a lot of different ways and in a lot of different areas and in a lot of different angles. So I will just say that before I go on this huge, large rant.
We love rants too, but that's true. I mean, just thinking that like every minute of every day, me existing in this world as a Black woman and all of the identities that I have is it literally impacts everything. It's almost like a choose your own adventure book that you don't get you don't get to choose the adventure. Like, you don't even have access to certain pages of the book.
Right.
You're like, oh, I didn't get to choose that part. Like, this is just how I exist in this world. So yeah, and being aware of it is its own choose your own adventure, right? Because you can move through the world as if you have access to all these choices,
right?
But you don't, because especially if you have any layer of marginalized identities, any layer, right? Then it's like, oh no, I didn't get to have a choice there. You only get the choice if you have the privilege of making a choice,
right?
So knowing that you don't have a choice, I guess, is a choice, maybe. But then that's its own stressor, because you're like, well, I don't even really have a choice about this. It's just how I, you know, show up in the world. So,
right.
Yeah. And I mean, but to that, I was almost like, I want to like open that up to like reimagining things. So I think, can you describe for me, you can describe using any sensory words or whatever, like a pleasure that you're looking forward to. Whether that's real or not, right? Like, it doesn't have to be something that's going to happen tomorrow or next week. Just how do you imagine pleasure if there are no boundaries to that? What does that look like for you?
More healing from my trauma. It's a ripple effect of me healing from my trauma. Once I heal from my trauma, I can do more things in a healthy way. I can connect more deeply with my community, with my friends, with my family. Pleasure in the future is healing from my trauma and seeing what kind of person I become, because I can only get better from healing. So I'm really looking forward to that. So healing, stopping generational traumas and stopping generational curses. I'm really looking forward to that. And there is a post I saved on my phone that's like, if you didn't come from a healthy family, make sure a healthy family comes from you. Ooh. And I don't know if I want kids or not. I flop back and forth all the time. But for me, family isn't just blood. Family is your friends as well. And so, you know, making sure a healthy family comes from me is also being able to like hold my friends accountable and hold each other accountable and, you know, modeling what healing from trauma looks like and modeling what healthy interaction and healthy relationships looks like. So that is the forefront. Like, that's the only thing I can think of right now. Like, I'm really looking forward to healing from more trauma. It's difficult and it sucks a lot, but the journey is difficult, but healing from the trauma and seeing what happens on the other side is absolutely amazing. Like, my therapist asks me from time to time, she's like, do you think you're in a better position now than you were 4 years ago? And I'm like, oh, absolutely. Like, I can't even imagine going back to the person that I was, you know? And I was scared. I was fragile. I was alone. I was having a lot of dissociative episodes and breakdowns. I was having a lot of trauma memories, and I didn't know what my own pleasure was. I didn't know what healthy relationships were, but now I can't imagine a life without them. So.
That is so beautiful.
This is why therapy should be free and accessible for everybody.
Absolutely. Talk to me about, do you have any like one thing or like, whether it's an object or a place or whatever, someone like the thing could be anything. Mm-hmm. That reminds you to center pleasure in your life. Like
my home,
my reminder.
My home, also my therapy appointments. So I live on my own. And the reason that I moved into where I am in the first place was I was in a super abusive relationship. And that person had control of the entire house. Like, I did not have my own personal space. And so I felt extremely trapped. And unfortunately, this person was a hoarder and also hoarded animals. And so I was in a very sick, disgusting environment. And I got this space. We were going to couples therapy. And I was like, I think it would really help my mental health if I got my own space that I could retreat to every once in a while. And so I got the place that I'm in now. And fortunately, I was able to use it as an avenue to get out of that situation entirely. But I was able to build this home around everything I need to either experience pleasure or take myself out of moments where I'm not experiencing pleasure. So like, maybe I've had a really hard day at work and I just want to come home and collapse, or I'm having an anxiety episode, or I don't feel well. I have specifically built and catered my home to help me. And so I have like a super comfy couch that I can lay on and work from. If my chronic pain is acting up, I've got an inversion table where I can literally flip upside down if my back hurts. I've got a bathtub so I can soak. I've got a super comfortable bed. My home is relatively quiet. I have incense, I have candles, I have a cat, like all of these things that I've built to remember that pleasure exists, or to recenter myself and be like, okay, let me sit and relax and things like that, especially now since I'm really not feeling well. So
that's beautiful. I keep saying that, but that just this idea of creating spaces, that was one of my commitments for 2020 is reimagining my space in my home to make sure that like this is beautiful. Like
for right. me,
it has to be beautiful. So I'm like, and I'm deeply impacted by the physical space that I'm in. So like my house is colorful. It's sparkling, right. and my bed is comfy, and like my food is good. Like all of those things, because those things remind me like you are experiencing life as you're living it. So every moment should be as beautiful as you can create.
Right. And it's interesting to see where our pleasures differ, because with my chronic pain and my neurodivergence, I get sensory overload really easily sometimes. And some days it's not that bad. Like I can go out, I can run errands. Other days it's like my air conditioning turns on and I'm immediately overwhelmed, or like I can't take noises above, like a murmur or something like that. Or like, there are days when like clothes don't feel right. And like, I have to wear like super big PJ shirts like I'm wearing right now, because like the tightness of clothes just kind of overwhelms me a little bit.
Yeah.
And you said, since I'm not feeling well, my sensory overload is a little bit lower today. So I'm like, this is fine, but you know, loud noises and stuff is just not gonna sit well with me. You said like, my house is colorful, and immediately my brain was like, I couldn't handle that right now. It's like all those bright colors would overwhelm me. And so like my living room doesn't have a lot of bright colors in it. It's not depressing, but it's like tan, white, black, like a tiny bit of red. But like, it's just like neutral colors. So I don't get overwhelmed. And like, I have blankets out there. My entertainment center has a sound bar in it and an electric fireplace. So like, I turn on the fireplace to get like super cozy in the wintertime. Like that's my thing. And then like my bed is, has like tan sheets and a deep purple comforter with patterns on it and stuff like that. But I don't have any like super bright colors in my home, because especially with my migraines and stuff, I can't take super bright, sharp contrasting colors. Yeah. And then when I have sensory overload, I just want to come home to like a muted space so I can calm down. Yeah. Even my cat is gray and white. Like, I can't have sensory overload anywhere. Even my cat. So my cat is 11 years old, and he's a grumpy old man. I love him. He has become in tune with like when I have sensory overload, when I'm hurting. And so he knows like when to keep his distance and when to be all up on me. And even when he's all up on me, he's not like bumping me with his head and meowing. He just like kind of like curls up on me or near me. So I am in control of like how much touch he gives me. And he doesn't fight when I pick him up. So like, if we're laying together and I'm like, suddenly I don't want you on me anymore, I just pick him up and I move him and he's cool. Like, he's just like, okay, you know.
Perfect.
Or if I still want him on me and I have to adjust because I have, my hip is messed up, if I have to adjust because my hip is hurting, he'll just like cling on to me, but not in like a really hard way. He'll like kind of raise up a little bit for me to adjust. And once I settle down, he'll lay right back on me. It's I love that man. He's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. But so it was really interesting to see where our pleasure differs. Because like the thought of being in a super bright, colorful home, like I have a spinning prize wheel in my office where I'm sitting here doing this podcast, and I keep looking at it and I'm like, oh, I have to like look back at the screen, because it just seems so much brighter and more sharp and contrasty now because I don't feel well. So I'm just like, oh, you know, so.
No, that's good to know. So when it's safe to have you over for lunch or dinner, then I'll just make sure that.
I'll let you know if I'm like, hey, I'm having sensory overload today. It's not a good day. So.
Because I would want you to be a pleasurable experience for you too. So,
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And that's good to know. So that's yeah. No,
I'm not. I'm not as young as I used to be. I can't do super loud space anymore because I get sensory overload. Same, like people are like, you want to go to a concert? And I'm like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. The best concert I ever went to, I was dating somebody and they got us tickets to see Janelle Monáe. It was great. Two, I was like, holy shit, I'm going to be overwhelmed. Because when I think of concerts, I think of like standing in this hot ass crowd and it's loud and like, but it was in a theater and there were like comfy chairs and we got to sit in it. And like concerts are loud, but it wasn't as loud as like screaming and headliners music. Yeah. Hall, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was one of the best experiences I've had in public in a very long time. Like I could walk out when I needed to, I could walk back in, like I could sit, like it was absolutely wonderful. I want to go to the Kentucky State Fair, but only because I like to pet the animals. That's literally the only reason. Like if they had like an animals only pass, I'd be all over it. But I'm like, it's going to be hot. That's going to overload my senses. It's going to be super loud. I have to walk a lot. And so I have to keep those things in mind also with experiencing pleasure as well. Like I can't have sensory overload. So
that's a really interesting point. Even like you might have a thing or a place like, oh, this brings me joy, but recognizing again what those boundaries are, and those boundaries really don't have anything to do with other people as much as they do for you. You're like, okay, these are boundaries. I like that better, like language-wise, than saying like limitations, because
it's like I just have certain boundaries. Because if those boundaries are violated, I'm not experiencing pleasure anymore. Like the pleasure of petting animals and things is overridden by the major sensory overload I'm gonna have.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So
then you'd be glad that you're not currently on campus. because it's fall. I mean, I'm because, you know, as another student affairs professional as well, we're about to experience Welcome Weekend. And I, speaking of sensory overload, I was just having conversations with some folks, you know, as we prepared for Welcome Weekend, that like, even as a undergrad student, I didn't know it was this when I was an undergrad, but going to the student activity center with all the students and the loud and the
all that COVID in there.
I mean, but COVID aside, I mean, because when I was 18 and I was in college, I was like, this is a lot.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that that was not pleasurable for me, because it was weird, you know, weird in quotation marks, that like I was an 18-year-old student on a college campus and I wasn't trying to be in the mix, right? I was like, no, this is loud. And it's like, it's a lot. So, I mean, that, but knowing what your boundaries are, even in spaces, and as you create your own space, like to me, like, again, like I said, I like that it's boundaries instead of limitations. It's like something you decide, whereas something that's imposed on you.
Right. And using boundaries instead of limitations gives me power as opposed to the environment having power, because it's like, it's like it's like handicap accessible. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is handicap accessible. Well, that's, some people frame that as ableism, because it's like, this space wasn't built for me, but now they built it for me.
They,
you know what I mean? Right, exactly. And that puts me last. And then it puts folks who are able-bodied first. Like, well, now you can come in. You know what I mean? And so I like using, this is my boundary. And
I love it.
You know, sometimes you have to realize that your boundaries are unreasonable. Like, for example, I grew up in a home where things were just like super quiet. And if they weren't, like, you got negative consequences. And so now I've internalized that. And so I get panicky and annoyed sometimes at common everyday noises that like I don't have control or I'm like, okay, you're being ridiculous. Like, this is how people live. My partner came to visit. And he was walking around and I was taught to walk like very lightly, like very quietly. And he just like unabashedly walks everywhere. And and the other thing is, I was taught to never, ever slam cabinets. But the way I was raised, slamming cabinets meant like just letting them close on their own. And so I'm used to like holding the cabinet until it like touches. And so like it barely makes any noise. Well, he's just living his normal life of like opening the cabinet, letting it shut on its own. But to me, it sounds like he's slamming them. And so I'm sitting here like, I really want to tell him to stop doing that. And I'm like, where is this coming from? I said, am I experiencing sensory overload? And I said, no, not really. It's not sensory overload. It's my past trying to feed into my future. And so I could sit here and be like, will you not walk as loud, you know? But it's not sensory overload. It's, that's how I was raised. And so I've internalized that and want to push it onto other people. And that's not healthy. You know, he's literally just living his life. He's just vibing, you know? And at this point I can tell when it's sensory overload versus like generational trauma, you know, like if it's sensory overload, I'm literally like uncomfortable. I don't feel well. I feel like I'm going to have an anxiety attack. If it's generational trauma, then it's like, I'm just annoyed. I'm irritated. I can hear my ancestor's voice being like, will you cut that shit out? I'm like, you know, and I'm like, that's not sensory overload. That's just me wanting to give in to trauma. You know what I mean? And so, and I let him know, like, we're very open and transparent about our conversations. And I'll be like, hey, just to let you know, if I seem a little flinchy or irritated when you walk or slam cabinets, this is why, like, this is how I was raised. And I said, don't take it personally. You do not need to change your behavior. It's something I need to work through personally. You know what I mean? And he's like, well, thank you for letting me know. I really appreciate it. And I said, it is not your responsibility to heal my trauma or to, and it's not your responsibility to mold your behaviors around my trauma, because that's giving the trauma power. And I don't want to give trauma that power anymore. So while the pleasure isn't there when he's like, quote unquote, slamming cabinets, the pleasure will come later in that I have overcome that generational trauma or that toxic behavior or toxic response. And then I can just live my normal life. So
that's, I keep saying it's beautiful, but it is. Like, I can't, I'm sure there's a, the stars fails me right now, but I think even just that awareness and that attentiveness and that intentionality around recreating spaces that you exist in, it's just, it's inspiring. And I keep struggling to find a word other than beautiful, but I think that that's definitely the best word that comes to mind. That is really
beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
What are you going to do today that centers pleasure? Like, what is the tangible thing that comes to mind first? And like, this is how I'm centering pleasure today.
I am going to relax on my couch. I'm probably going to order food because I have recognized that I do not have the energy to cook today.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to take a nap later because that is what my body desires at the moment. And also I have realized that like resting, whether it be sleeping or not sleeping, is what my body needs to heal. And so, not only am I not feeling well with whatever the hell is going on with this UTI, whatever, but also like my body just hurts today, which it does every day. But if I rest, then my body will heal, but I also later on need to like move around. So I'll probably like do some stretches or something like that, because motion is lotion, quote unquote, apparently, whatever. Sometimes I just don't want to move, but that's where my pleasure is going to be. And not worrying about my full-time job, checking on things for Siskat Tea, like clearing out notifications on social media and stuff. But other than that, I'm just going to focus on myself and feeling better. So
that sounds lovely. And it's Sunday. And historically, that has been a day of rest, whether you
right
in these, you know, whatever your religious practice or spiritual practice is. I know that that is it for me, is resting.
Right.
In some way, I'm still going to clean up because I want my resting includes me get preparing my home for the week.
Right.
So that leaves me rest during the week. So I've been looking forward to speaking with you all week.
Oh, thank you.
And you did not disappoint.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I love your transparency in your journey, in your relationship to pleasure. It's why you were one of the first people that came to mind, because it's like, I know I'm the sap. Okay. I'm not a sap. I am the sap. Right.
I'm also just really awkward when I receive compliments, because I didn't get them a lot, like growing up,
going into adulthood, totally,
things like that. So I don't have a pre-programmed answer. So I'm just going
to
sit here.
You don't have to receive. That's what
I'm like. Okay. Thank you.
Job.
I'm really not that great, but thank you.
Yes.
I'm just vibing.
You yes, you are. Absolutely. But thank you for sharing. Thank you so much for sharing with everything. And you know, that's it. Like, I'm just like, I don't know what at the end, I'm just like, wow. It's just the fact that, thank you for, you know, being willing to share. And then
I think she made it pretty clear. It's okay not to feel okay every day. And owning that, there's pleasure in owning how you feel, even when how you feel isn't good or good. And I use air quotes for that. Also owning like the act of pleasure of owning that journey, in the sense of getting the help that you need and seeking the help that you need. Because, you know, she talks a lot about, you know, going to therapy and finding a good therapist and helping with that journey and finding healing in the relationship she indulges in now. I think we sometimes discount the act of seeking help to get pleasure as pleasure itself, because it doesn't always feel good to say, oh, I gotta go talk to my therapist today, or oh, I have to create a space in my house. I have to do the work of creating a space in my house that actually fits. Like, for example, when we were talking about how we the differences in how we create spaces, and how my space in my home is colorful and quirky and flowery and stuff. She's like, give me some warning. I'll give you warning before I come visit you and eat some of your food, because if it's too bright, too loud, I can't, you know. So her creating this place of comfort for herself and, you know, for now her partner and for her cats, and how important it is to have those things nearby, and the act of doing that and how that can bring pleasure too. That's it from me today. Now I want to hear from you. How did you center your own pleasure today? Hit me up at sprinklesparkle.org.
Sprinkle Sparkle is created and hosted by Nubia Bennett and produced by me, Alex Biscardi. Our music is by Allison Cross, and Mindy Folner does our graphic design. Sprinkle Sparkle is part of the Louisville Public Media Podcast Incubator, with support from the Community Foundation of Louisville and the Eye Care Institute's Butchertown Clinical Trials. Our executive producer is Laura Ellis. For more episodes and to keep in touch, visit sprinklesparkle.org. From LPM, Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.